Okay, I'd like to thank the organizers, Sun Sik and Michelle, for putting together a wonderful condensed matter workshop. It's been a lot of fun so far. So today I want to talk to you a little bit about work I've done at MAC with Catherine Kellen on an intrinsic anomalous Hall effect in a chiral multiband superconductor. And so originally we were motivated, so I won't keep you in suspense. The chiral multiband superconductor we had in mind was strontium ruthenate, which is a putative chiral superconductor. And we were motivated by an experiment done at Stanford that it's a polar Kerr rotation measurement, and this is sensitive to an anomalous Hall conductivity. That's a Hall conductivity without any magnetic field at all. And we were trying to understand this. So at the time, we felt that the available theoretical explanations of this effect were perhaps lacking. So that was our original goal. And as we proceeded, what we sort of began to realize is that actually the basic question we were confronting was much more general than that. It's just simply, how do you get an anomalous Hall effect? So it's a Hall effect where I have no magnetic field in a clean non-ferromagnetic material. Okay, now by clean, I simply mean there are no impurities in the system, non-ferromagnetic, not ferromagnetic. And an anomalous Hall effect simply means if I apply an electrical current across the x direction, I'll get some current in the y direction. So of course, you need to break time reversal symmetry. And you can do this by having some kind of ferromagnetic current pattern. An example would be vortex matter. So there's a number of fairly exotic proposals, in particular in the lanthanum copper oxides, for some kind of spontaneous vortex lattice without any kind of magnetic field, close to 1/8 doping. There are also D plus ID density waves, staggered flux phases, also the cuprates, and finally chiral PX plus IPY, or any chiral superconductors. So these are all states of matter that have some magnetic moment and carrying electrical current in them. But the main message I really want to convey to you today is that it's not enough to break time reversal symmetry and have a electrical current to get a non-zero Hall conductivity. It turns out that in order to have an anomalous Hall conductivity, intrinsic Hall conductivity, you need multiple orbitals. Okay, now by intrinsic, I mean one of two things. I mean either extremely clean, which is what a lot of people take to be intrinsic, or if you're a ferromagnetist, really you just mean a conductivity that shows up at a Hall conductivity that shows up at the one loop level, just a bare loop Hall conductivity. And of course, in a lot of systems, having a completely clean, going to the clean limit is the same as having a one-loop, bare-loop Hall conductivity. There's no impurity vertex corrections. In principle, for me, I can have electron correlation vertex corrections. I'm going to address that in a moment. This is a very general conclusion. I suspect that sort of people, at least in the older ferromagnetic literature, are aware of it. For chiral superconductors, what this means is that you need multiple order parameters. You can't have just one order parameters. You need multiple order parameters living on these multiple orbitals such that you have a different phase. So each of these chiral order parameters are complex. They have a phase. And you need at least two of these order parameters, and they need to have different phases. And that just gives you the blue point above there, too. If I have two order parameters living on two different orbitals, and they have two different phases, I'm going to get an electric current between those two orbitals. So in the putative chiral superconductor strontium ruthenate, what this means is that if you know a little bit about strontium ruthenate, there's really three ruthenium d orbitals that are the locus of superconductivity. But in this case, you need superconductivity to arise on the dxz and dyz orbitals, which is contrast to a lot of literature which supposes it arises on this very isotropic gamma band, which is made up of the xy ruthenium d orbital. Now, in principle, and I'm not going to go into any detail about this in this talk, in principle, single orbital physics plus vertex corrections can give you a Hall effect, but this effect really goes away at very, very high frequencies. Now, that's an asymptotically exact statement at the level of some rules. If you're an experimentalist, though, what can we tell you? What frequencies can you go to before you see the vanishing of vertex corrections? In the calculations we've done, it seems that vertex corrections become largely unimportant past a couple of hundred millivolts. And that's an important point to stress because keep in mind the experiment that we really have in mind is an optics experiment. Be nice if I had a laser. Which is this Kerr rotation experiment, which takes place about an electron volt. Okay, so this is a near-infrared optical probe with a Hall conductivity, and it's really a very powerful probe of time reversal symmetry breaking states. So this is a basic idea. You send it. So this is a well-known technique from studying ferromagnets. But the basic idea is you send in some beam of light near infrared. In this case, it's polarized along a particular axis. It bounces off the sample, and there's a rotation in the axis of polarization. And this the degree of rotation is characterized by this Kerr angle. And the important thing, so this Kerr angle depends on a number of material parameters, including the complex frequency-dependent index of refraction. But the really important thing is it depends on the Hall conductivity. So this goes away if there's no Hall conductivity in the system, and the Hall conductivity is a direct probe of time reversal symmetry breaking. And so the Kapitolnik group at Stanford has really pioneered this experiment. I should add it's not nearly as simple as I've made it out to be. They actually have a very complicated Sagnac interferometer, so it looks nothing like this. But that's sort of the cartoon version. And they've done this on a number of materials. Strontium ruthenate, YBCO, LBCO, also strontium. Lanthanum strontium copper oxide. And for strontium ruthenate, what they found, this is from PRL in about 2006, they found that below the critical temperature of strontium ruthenate, so strontium ruthenate has a very low, it's a perovskite material, but it has a very low critical temperature, which is, was one of the first, correct me if I'm wrong, which was one of the first pieces of evidence that something strange was going on in strontium ruthenate. It wasn't like its other perovskite cousins, the cuprates. You have very low TC, and below TC, what they found, so this is also a very clean sample. Below TC, they see this Kerr angle. It goes up from zero to about 80 nanoradians. So it's an extremely small angle. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about chiral superconductivity. So the assumption of these experimentalists and most other people, I think, was that the origin of this Kerr angle was lay in the fact that strontium ruthenate is a chiral PX plus IPY superconductor. So a chiral superconductor is something that breaks time reversal symmetry. It carries a finite magnetic angular momentum, okay, as opposed to just a regular orbital angular momentum, to say a D-wave superconductor. The Cooper pair order parameter is complex, in this case PX plus IPY, so that tells you it breaks time reversal symmetry. You can think of these things as kind of like spinning tops. There'd be many proposals for chiral superconducting states, going back to some original proposals for high TC cuprates when they didn't really know that it was D-wave. There's some suggestion it could be D plus ID. Graphene as well, this is actually a very recent proposal, and strontium ruthenate. But it's never been unambiguously spotted. And the reason I say unambiguously is because strontium ruthenate is, I mean, there's been superconductivity in this system was discovered, I think, in 94 in Maeno's group. And the experiments that have been done are sort of a little bit conflicting. There's a nice review there. So we came into this. We tried to study, see what was going on with the Kerr angle. And so the Kerr angle is a supposed exact probe of time reversal symmetry breaking. But the only existing theory mechanism, since this experiment is being put out, the only existing theory is one that makes use of intrinsic, so an impurity scattering effect. And let me remind you that these are enormously clean samples. Okay, so just a brief review of how one can, in principle, get an intrinsic Hall effect in a system that breaks time reversal symmetry breaking. Now, this is basically the Hall conductivity here. It's just a regular conductivity tensor defined in terms of the XY current correlation function. But crucially, it's the XY minus the YX current correlation function. And that's what picks out the time reversal anti-symmetric part. So you can imagine it as follows. Imagine you send in a photon that's polarized along the x-axis. You send it into a material, and it comes out polarized along the y-axis. And that could happen for any number of reasons. But now, subtracting the opposite term, that has the effect of sort of reversing the tape. So imagine watching this process. An x-polarized photon comes in, a y-polarized photon comes out, and now you just put the tape in reverse. Y-polarized photon comes in on the right-hand side, and it comes out on the left-hand side. So this is the exact, it's just the time-reversed opposite of this. I'm just running the tape backwards. And so if there's any difference between these two scenarios, it means I must have broken time-reversal symmetry. So you might imagine that I have an x-polarized photon here. It excites an electron from one orbital. In fact, this is exactly what happens, we believe, in strontium ruthenate. It excites an electron from one orbital. The electron goes to a second orbital. It acquires a phase. And then running the tape backwards, the electron acquires a phase going backwards in time, too, under, of course, complex conjugation. So you need to break time reversal symmetry to get a non-zero answer. And it's very easy to see that a one-loop approximation for the Hall conductivity will always give you a zero answer. Because at a one-loop level, your Green's functions and your velocity vertices are just functions. They're not matrices. On the other hand, if I have a multi-orbital system, these get elevated to matrices. And at least in principle, I have the possibility of a non-zero Hall conductivity. And that's an algebraic statement without being a physical statement. But I'll unpack the physics for you in a little bit. But that shows you at least that in principle, I need a multi-orbital system just to have this one-loop Hall conductivity. OK, so as a simple model now of a multi-orbital chiral superconductor, I consider the following model. So I imagine that I have two microscopic orbitals. So thinking ahead to strontium ruthenate, these can represent ruthenium DXZ, DYZ orbitals, or Vanier block states composed of these orbitals. And they have some dispersion, chi 1 being the dispersion of the first orbital, chi 2 being the dispersion on the second orbital. And I get off-diagonal terms just representing interorbital tunneling. And I have some interaction term, but I'm going to just treat this all at the level of BCS theory. The crucial physics comes from, in addition to this two-orbital structure, comes from my order parameter, which I allow to be complex. Now, in this treatment here, I'm just going to consider the simplest possible case, which is just I just have intra-orbital pairing. That is, I just have a Cooper pair on each orbital. In our paper, and you can generalize this completely to consider inter-orbital pairing as well, but it doesn't appreciably add to the physics, so I'll just keep this as simple as possible. You have these, so we have two intra-orbital pair states. They're complex, so delta double prime is the imaginary part, and delta prime is the real part. And the crucial parameter that describes this state is the phase of the order parameter, the relative phase of the orbital parameter. It's not a global U1 gauge phase. It's really this relative phase that characterizes chiral superconductivity. And just for future reference, my E plus and minus is my BCS quasiparticle branches. So of course, I have a two orbital systems, two bare dispersion, so I'm going to have two quasiparticle branches. And so calculating this Hall conductivity at the one-loop level, what you find is that it's a bit easier to understand pictorially, the only thing that contributes to the Hall conductivity are processes that look like this. An X photon comes in, it excites an electron from the one orbital to the two orbital, and then that drops down to the one orbital at the Y vertex, emitting a Y polarized photon, and then it's time reversal invariant. So it's a manifestly interorbital process. The full expression at t equals zero just looks like this. And there's a couple of things I want to point out to you. The first is this first term here, which is just the imaginary part of the complex conjugate of the first order parameter on orbital 1 times the second order parameter on orbital 2. And what that quantity is, that's just the relative phase between the two order parameters. So I need two distinct order parameters with two different relative phases. The other thing to note is that basically all these terms here are just of order e squared over h bar. However, the order parameter itself and this term here brings in a suppression factor of delta over t. So basically, everything here looks like a regular conductivity, except for this first term, which is enormously small. Right? It's about 1 times 10 to the minus 8 for strontium ruthenate. So that's what's going to make this Hall conductivity very, very small. It's directly proportional to the order parameter itself. And finally, this is a frequency-dependent Hall conductivity. So you see the characteristic frequency dependence here is set by a kind of a Van Hove-like singularity. So I have these two bands, and they're separated by a tunneling parameter. And it's the addition of those two bands that that's going to set the relevant scale for all the frequency-dependent stuff. So it's not the order parameter itself. OK, and just to understand this, so remember at the beginning I told you that really what's going on here is that there's some interorbital current. Quite generally, beyond chiral superconductivity, I need an orbital current, an interorbital current, to get an anomalous Hall effect. And in chiral superconductors, that's what having an order parameter with a different phase on each orbital gives you. So having this different relative phases, phi 1 and rather theta 1 and theta 2, just amounts to, you can show that this combination of variables here is just an imaginary interorbital coherence. It's the imaginary part of C1 dagger C2. And that's exactly proportional to the interorbital current. So what this is telling you is, in this little toy model here, we have two order parameters. This is my, obviously, p-wave order parameter living on orbital 1, and this is my p-wave orbital parameter living on orbital 2. And there's some difference in the phases between them. These are complex order parameters. And as the electron hops between the two orbitals, it acquires a phase. So the real part of this process, non-dissipative part, you can almost think of as like a Josephson-Leggett tunneling. So that's the crucial bit of physics, is I have this interorbital current. And it's important to reemphasize that there's no, if I have a chiral superconductor, it just exists in a single orbital system, then there is no intrinsic anomalous Hall effect whatsoever. Okay, so now we can ask what this has to do with strontium ruthenate. The strontium ruthenate, for starters, is not two orbitals. It's actually, there are three really dominant orbitals in strontium ruthenate, electronic orbitals that come about from the hybridization of the ruthenium d orbitals with oxygen p orbitals. So these green blobs here are oxygen p orbitals, and the red blue are the ruthenium d orbitals. So first I have these ruthenium dxy orbitals, which left to themselves would just give me this nice very isotropic gamma band. I have the ruthenium dxz and dyz orbitals, which give me essentially quasi one-dimensional bands. And when you add up all that, this is what you get. This is ARPES. There's even nicer quantum oscillation data from Andy McKenzie's group, but this is a nice two-dimensional slice of the band structure in K-space. And what you see is that my gamma band is essentially just my ruthenium dxy orbital. It's unchanged. It doesn't really talk to either of these orbitals. But my quasi-1D dxz and dyz orbitals hybridize strongly. So that's what you'd expect if you didn't have spin-orbit coupling. There actually is significant spin-orbit coupling in strontium ruthenate. But as far as the optical Hall effect is concerned, this is sort of irrelevant. Because optically, to first-order and perturbation theory, treating spin-orbit coupling perturbatively, the dxy orbital doesn't talk to dxz or dyz. So optically, I can't transit between these two orbitals. So they hybridize, and that has an influence on the energy dispersion, but it doesn't affect their optical properties as far as conductivity is concerned. So what happens then is essentially strontium ruthenate, even though it's a three-orbital system, it boils down optically to a two-orbital system. And the only way I can get any kind of optical Hall response as if there's either superconductivity on the xz or yz orbitals. Okay, and so what we did is we took the simplest model of chiral superconductivity where this happens. So this is actually a model that's been considered by a few groups listed here. So in this model you have one superconducting order parameter, say you're the px part of your order parameter naturally living on the ruthenium dxz, or rather dx orbital. That should be dxz. And the second, the py part of your order parameter living on the yz orbital. These are give you your different chiral components, so your px component and your ipy component. In contrast, what most people have assumed in studying strontium ruthenate is that superconductivity arises entirely on this xy or gamma orbital. So this is a slightly different model, but as I said, these groups here have sort of predicted it from quote-unquote first principles. These are RPA-type analyses. This is a functional RG, and they've argued that the dominant instability actually rises not on this isotropic xy orbital, but on these xz and yz orbitals. For our purposes, though, we're just going to take, just to see what kind of Hall conductivity this can give us, we're going to assume that the pairing occurs entirely on the x and y components. And then we're going to combine that simple model with sort of typical strontium ruthenate parameters taken, for instance, from LDA. The crucial thing is this dxz, dyz hopping parameter, which is only 40 millivolts. So that's the parameter, remember, that's going to really set all the frequency dependence of this. So that gives me my Van Hove-like singularity. So the red dash, this is the Hall conductivity as a function of frequency. The red dashed lines are the imaginary part of the Hall conductivity. The blue line is a real part. So below this is all at t equals 0.2. At finite temperature, there'll be some filling of spectral weight down here. But the important part is that below this energy scale set by the sum of the two band dispersions, I have no possibility of generating any kind of excitations. So the imaginary part is zero. And then I have this, this tail up here. And below, above this singularity is really the conductivity is dominated by the real part, which is negative down here. I should say the sign of the conductivity is, of course, determined by the direction of chirality. So I could equally have well made this minus I, because that's, of course, degenerate, px and px minus I, px plus ipy and px minus ipy. And that just would have flipped this over. But you see that by the time I get out to 0.8 eV, which is where the experiment is done, of course, the Hall response is quite small. So it's already very small out here. It's about 10 to the minus 6. By the time I get out here, it's around 10 to the minus 8. But we can plug this into a very simple model of the conductivity to get an estimate for the Kerr angle. So remember, the Kerr angle depends not only on the Hall conductivity, but also various dielectric properties, the frequency-dependent index of refraction. So all these caveats aside, what we find, we get an estimate for the frequency-dependent Kerr angle of 0.8 eV. We say it's about 50 nanoradians. And that's not far off the experimental value of 100 nanoradians, which tells us that we're in the right ballpark and maybe we're on to something. So this brings us back to a question that I sort of only loosely alluded to at the start, which is, where is the order parameter in Strontium-Ruthenate? So as I said, most theories have assumed that it arises just on this isotropic XY orbital, whereas now this is sort of suggestive that there could be a significant component of the order parameter, at least on the DXZ and DYZ orbitals. I should say these are not mutually exclusive. Most of the theories of this superconducting state have assumed some pairing on the XY orbital and vice versa. But for the XY scenarios, it really is a parasitic effect. So it's enormously small. Whereas at least in this, the theories that argue that it should arise on XZ and YZ, there's a comparable instability in XY in some cases. But unlike the XY orbital, so if I have superconductivity on the XY orbital, there's no intrinsic Hall effect. It's absolutely gone, okay? Because the XY orbital is optically inactive and it's a single orbital for all intents and purposes. I really need this multiple orbital scenario, superconductivity on the XZ and YZ orbitals, in order to get an intrinsic Hall effect. And doing that, we find that we get a Kerr angle that's of the right ballpark to describe the Kerr rotation experiments. We haven't considered the possibility of an intrinsic impurity Hall conductivity. It's known, of course, in the case of the single isotropic band that that's the only contribution to the Hall conductivity. But it's worth remembering these are enormously clean systems. So one way to test these scenarios is simply by varying the impurity concentration. By doing that, we hope that people will be able to get some idea of where superconductivity lives primarily. And just in passing, I'll note one other thing. One of the most dramatic manifestations, of course, of chiral superconductivity is not just, you have this superconducting state with some finite angular momentum. It's not just a non-zero Hall effect, but I should have edge currents. So all these rotating Cooper pairs, of course, I have some actual current inside the system. This gets screened out inside the superconductor, but at the edges, this adds up to a very macroscopic current, which is being predicted. And one of the enduring mysteries in this field is why nobody has seen an edge current. And so if you believe that superconductivity takes place primarily on the XZ and YZ orbital, it turns out that this is a chiral superconducting state, but it's not topologically protected, which means it's very easy to kill it off by impurities or finite temperature effects. In contrast, only the XY superconducting scenario supports this chiral, this topologically protected chiral edge current. Okay, and with that, let me come back to the slide where I told you what I was going to tell you and summarize by saying, anomalous Hall effect, anomalous intrinsic Hall effect can only occur quite generally in a system where I have multiple orbitals. For a superconductor, in particular chiral superconductor, what that means is I need to have multiple superconducting order parameters living on these multiple orbitals such that, if I have these two different order parameters on these two different orbitals, or three or four, and they have different relative phases, then I'll get an interorbital current. And it's really the interorbital current that's driving all this physics. For the putative chiral superconductor strontium-ruthenate, what this means is that an intrinsic anomalous Hall effect requires superconductivity on the XZ and YZ orbitals, which is definitely a minority position. When people consider strontium ruthenate, they suppose superconductivity arises primarily on the XY orbital. And finally, it's very likely that at high frequencies, probed in these Kerr rotation experiments, that vertex corrections are rather unimportant. They're strongly suppressed. So it's very likely that all the physics that's being seen in this experiment is basically single particle band structure effects. As I said here, it's really a direct probe of some kind of interorbital current. So I thank you for your attention.